We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Roto Grinders today. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender Ed, Blender HD. You're going to follow me on Twitter. It's Monday, December 18th. We'll be taking a look, recap of yesterday's NFL Week 15 slate recap, a review, because it's Monday. And you know what we do on Mondays? Mondays with McCool. I bring in James McCool, the co-author with me on the Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports, 15-hour audio DFS masterclass. You can pick up at theoryofdfs.com, as well as the Advanced Players Course and the custom Excel tools. Go check that all out. Theoryofdfs.com. Hit that thumbs up button on your first thing in the door. And James, I could tell from your tweets yesterday, and I could also tell from the fact that my cash lineup outscored all of my GPP lineups. That while I made a little bit of money yesterday because of cash games and props, yeah, that GPP wise, you didn't do so hot.
No, man, I rostered Derrick Henry, having a historically bad performance. First player in history to have 20 or more touches and have less than 15 yards from scrimmage. 4 receptions for 1 receiving yard.
And what, and nine rushes for 7 yards or something?
No, it was 16 rushing attempts for 9 rushing yards.
So he went, so basically his line was what, 16 rushes for 9 yards and 4 receptions for -1 yards?
No, four receptions for 1 yard. He had
one. 10. Oh, okay. That's a big difference. -1, that's horrible, but to get 4 receptions and get 1 yard out of it, that's much better.
But you want to know what's messed up? He scored 5 fantasy points, and 4 of those came from PPR period. On FanDuel, he would have scored like 2.5 fantasy points or something. In standard scoring, where you don't get anything for receptions, he scored like less than a full point. I have no words. He's 6% owned. If he was 36% owned, he'd have crushed the slate, right?
36% owned against the Titans, he would have been. He would have, instead of that Levis rushing touchdown, Henry would have gotten that, right? And he would have broke off an 87-yard run at some point, yeah, right? Because that's what happens in these days of the NFL. I mean, we're exaggerating. It's just like I take a look at the Millie ownership, and it's just basically like if they're on, they do well. Well, I mean, we're kind of exaggerating, but it sort of feels like it's like how did everyone know, right? But I mean, you could say truthfully in the running back position, like Bijan Robinson. I mean, Henry was 10% owned with 5 points. Bijan Robinson was 15% owned, and he got Arthur Smith, right? So like 1.4% owned, 1.4 points. And you take a look at that salary range. I played Tony Pollard, so I did a little bit better than you. Right. So I went in this range and I thought it's like, I played a bunch of guys in this range. I didn't go down low enough. The problem was is that I played Rashad White.
Yeah.
Right. He came in at 15% owned. I thought he would have been a little bit lower than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't play Derrick Henry. I didn't play Bijan Robinson, but I played White and Pollard. And I played one lineup with Aaron Jones. And I just didn't go down to James Cook and just assume that he was going to get 30 carries on a Josh Allen-led Bills team against the Cowboys. But yeah, when the Cowboys just can't stop anything, the Bills just did the same thing over and over again. And yeah, that game was kind of a disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, I liked James Cook. I thought he was fine. I thought he was fine play. I like that. That was the best game environment on the slate, right? Like,
The Rams, Commanders game, I thought was.
No, I like the Rams. My one VPP lineup was a Rams stack. I thought that was like the best team to stack on the slate was the Rams. But as far as game environment, games that I thought had the best chance of like real fireworks, I thought that it was Buffalo Dallas. The problem was that it was just far too expensive for DFS purposes. So like I had no way really to stack it. But I wouldn't have used James Cook in my Buffalo stack if I would have gone with a Buffalo stack. I thought he was fine, but as far as running backs go, it was like, it was Kyron Williams at the top. And then, I mean, look at the ownership, right? Like Kyron Williams, right, best play overall, and Christian McCaffrey, if you can afford him, and a lot of people were able to afford him, obviously. I thought that Derrick Henry was in a really good spot. Egg on my face. I thought that Raheem Mostert was in a good spot. He only scored 18, even though he had two touchdowns. So, James Cook's probably like the seventh or eighth running back in my mind on this slate, if not lower. So I couldn't have gotten there. Even with three lineups, I only played one lineup this week, but even with three lineups, I'm not getting to James Cook.
So in your one, so you played a Stafford stack in your one lineup.
Yeah.
Right. Which taking a look at ownership was like, you did everything. You did what everyone else, like the thing that the recurring theme of these recaps that we've been going over, especially the past month, or 6 weeks, is that adjusting ownership. People want to play the good games.
Yep.
Right. So you take a look and it's like original projected ownership would say rationally that Cooper Kupp, like you have Kyron Williams high owned, and you have Matthew Stafford high owned at quarterback. Mm-hmm. That Kupp and Puka, they would be the ones kind of squeezed, and they weren't. And then people just said, I want to play the Rams, and they just played a ton of the Rams. Yeah. Right, we take a look at the highest owned players in the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. In the top 10, there were four Rams in the top 10. And then once you take out the Rams, right, we go to San Francisco. McCaffrey's 35, Sam Debo 16, Purdy 16, Ayuk's 12, Kittle's even 6. Like the ownership discounts you're getting are going to be primarily in the games that people don't want to play. And anything that people want to play that looks appealing is going to be much higher on than you think they are going to be.
So here's something really quick. I do want to say that like this week, the team totals made it so it was just like the 49ers and the Rams. Like the team totals they went completely off a cliff after basically just the 49ers and the Rams. Miami had a high team total and then Tyreek got ruled out. And then it was kind of like, all right, well, can Waddle actually step into those shoes? I think they lost like 2.5 points on their team total or something like that when Tyreek got ruled out, which, by the way, that's a massive drop for a player that's not a quarterback. 2.5 points, that's a lot. But 49ers and the Rams, that those were the spots that made the most sense by far based on team total, based on price, based on everything, right? Buffalo was expensive and had a team total of 22 or 23. Dallas was expensive. Their team total was less than Buffalo because they were underdogs at Buffalo. That there were only three teams with team totals over 25 points, and nobody wanted to play Miami because Tyreek was out. So all that ownership consolidated onto the Rams and the 49ers. And this week, actually, ownership was the closest that it's been in the last like month for like all sources. And it was still under by quite a bit in a couple spots. Kyren Williams specifically, I think he was like 73% owned in the 200 or something gross like that. So it is the story of the season so far that ownership is not capturing how heavily things are condensing. But I think that this week, uniquely to the last couple weeks, we have had the teams with the, like, yes, they are the teams that everyone stacked because they're the best teams, but also based on Vegas, like, their team totals were far and away just the best on the slate. So that this week makes a little bit more sense to me. And that's why I think that ownership was a little bit closer this week.
Yeah, but that's the reason why I think going slightly off the board stack-wise is, I mean, that's kind of like what I do. So like playing, like Jaden Reed's going to be God knows how owned, but Tucker Kraft's going to be sort of popular as a punt tight end. Why not play a Jordan Love stack? And you could also play Aaron Jones or Dontavian Wicks or something like that in there. And then you also get the Tampa Bay side where like no one's playing no one. I mean, like Rashad White, and then that's it.
No.
Maybe. Yeah. And then Evans, and of course Godwin had a great game. So you also take a look at the Cleveland. Originally, I thought Cleveland was going to be overowned, and it turns out they weren't because people didn't want to play this game. So like Flacco, Cooper, and Njoku, like I thought Cooper would be higher owned. I thought Njoku would be about where he was owned. But Flacco was 4.4% owned. People didn't recency bias their way into Flacco stacks. So I didn't play a Flacco stack because I thought they would be overowned.
There's some pretty heavy priors against Joe Flacco here. It's gonna take more than a couple day games of Joe Flacco being good before people come around to playing him.
I thought maybe people would, so like I didn't. But of course I galaxy brained myself into doing the same thing, but I played. Is
no
he even
way.
On the list? Is he even on the list?
You can't be serious.
Was he 0% owned? Was he? Well, it can't be zero. I had Tommy DeVito lineup.
Why?
Everyone was playing Rashid Shaheed and stuff. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna play Tommy DeVito, Wandale Robinson, Darren Waller.
Why?
And running back with Shaheed. They're playing in the Superdome. You never know.
You didn't need to do that.
The point that I'm making is that going slightly off the board for your stacks, and then
that
you
is not
like,
slightly off the board. DeVito was 0% owned. You're not even playing the same.
He got like almost 40 rushing yards. Actually,
you're like, oh yeah, you got to get a little bit off the board when you're playing chess while you're playing freaking badminton. Like you're not even playing chess at that point.
I played Saquon Barkley at 4% owned.
I don't think that Saquon
I played Kamara and Shaheed, and
I think Kamara was a good play.
And there you go. But the whole point is that once you do that, the rest of your lineup, I had Kyren Williams, I had Jaden Reed, I surround that with the just give me the best projected lineup at that point. To me, sure. I just find it so much harder to go into a game like the Rams game, right? You go into the Rams game. Where's LAR? Where the hell is this, right? Good luck. Look at this ownership. Like, if you're going to go in and you're going to go, okay, I'm going to play Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, DeMarcus Robinson, and Kyren Williams, and then run it back with take a look at Washington. And it's like, I'll play Gibson in my running back spot. Mm-hmm. Like, now you have to go. Now you have to find – it's much harder. You're not playing Jaden.
Now you know what you have to do. Now you know what you have to do. You have to play Derrick Henry and get 10 total yards out of it.
But that's what makes it so much harder.
I disagree. I think
it's the same. I mean, I'm saying it as an exaggeration, but the two different dynamics of if you go off the board on your stack, you can just jam in the chalk and the rest of your lineup and just the best projected players.
Sure.
It's a little bit harder to go, to me at least, from a heuristic standpoint, to go, well, I'm going to play the Stafford correlated chalk that is combinatorically owned much higher than it should be, and then find the three one-off 5% owned guys that do well. I think it's just harder to pick out three different people that hit their ceiling than just hit like, oh, this game goes off and not many people are on it. And if it does go off, I got all the best projections around it anyway. I don't have to find Chris Godwin one off in order to win this.
See, I think it's easier to pivot off of individual players. Like I don't think that you are wrong in the way that you go about it, because you go about it in a similar way to that I go about MLB, where I would rather just play lower stacks in MLB and then just like have the chalk pitchers, and that's not hard for me. In NFL, on the other hand,
says it's easier to not play a giant stack.
Yeah, it's 100% easier to not play a giant stack.
It is true. Yes. It's not like you're making a reaction of like, yes, out of my 10 lineups, I played 7 Tommy DeVito lineups. It's like I'm not allowed to have 1 Tommy DeVito lineup.
No, you shouldn't have done that. You didn't need it. What was their team total? Hold on.
People played people played low team totals. Their team total, I think, was 15 or something.
It was 17.25. You're not even giving yourself enough credit.
17.25 was very high to me because I also played a Bailey Zappi lineup and their team total was only 15. So like,
why?
I figured that Bailey Zappi. Well, I played Rashee Rice in that lineup. It was Zappi with Douglas and Henry and Rashee Rice. And then you jam in McCaffrey and Kyren Williams and all the good players. What's wrong with that?
Everything is wrong with that. Everything is wrong with that. I'm not even going to grace that with
analysis. If you're going to play Demario Douglas chalk, you might as well correlate it.
Don't play Demario Douglas chalk.
Well, that I did that in the other lineups.
Good. You should have done it in all your lineups.
I'm allowed to make my vomit stack.
You didn't even need to use Wandell Robinson chalk. You could have just not played Tommy DeVito. He was like 14% owned, right?
Rashid Shaheed, what happened there? Everyone saw Olave was out and just said all of. I mean, I did it also, so it's not like it's not just. I played Shaheed in half my lineups, and I'm like, okay, here's someone that could catch 3 balls for 152 yards. So like, give him a minute.
He was already projecting chalky before Olave was ruled out. Like he was already projecting like 15% owned.
I just preferred him to like the Wandales and the Mario Douglases who have like 4.5 ADOTs, and you have to just hope they break one. Like Shaheed maybe has the less volume, has a garbage quarterback throwing him the ball. It's like, oh, he probably can't throw the ball more than 8 yards. But, I mean, he could get there in one play more likely than some of these other guys.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Rashid was a bad play in a vacuum.
But at 20% owned, I mean, then that was twice as much as I thought he was going to be.
He was over-owned. I would have played him in a Saints stack. I wouldn't have played him.
You would have played him in like a Tommy DeVito, a run back of a Tommy DeVito stack.
I would not have done that because I wasn't going to play Shaheed anyway. I thought he was overowned, so I wasn't going to touch him.
But once you plug in Tommy DeVito and Darren Waller into the lineup, you can play an overowned Shaheed.
Yeah, but you still have to care about if a player is overowned, like based on what you should expect out of them. I mean, this goes back. A couple weeks ago, man, we were talking about Wandell Robinson. He was really, really heavy chalk one week. I don't remember what week it was. But like you and I talked about it, and the way that I looked at it was Wandell Robinson, his best case scenario game is like 8 catches for 50 yards and a touchdown. That is his his God mode game. He doesn't get more than that based on team total. Rashid in this situation, like, yeah, technically you can say that he's a guy who can have 3 to 5 receptions for 120 yards and a touchdown, sure. But like at the same time, you like thinking about the chances of that happening, which are already relatively slim, and adding on to that the chances of a Tommy DeVito with Wandell Robinson stack getting there is like it just doesn't work. Like the odds of it happening, just go bet it. Just go put in a prop and make an SGP.
Maybe
or something.
I did. Maybe I also had that.
I don't doubt that you did, actually.
I think I had a Tommy DeVito over passing yards, I believe.
But going back to what I was saying, I don't mind choosing stacks. And one of the reasons why I didn't mind going with a Ram stack is because it directly leveraged Kyren Williams chalk too. Like, I didn't play Kyren Williams.
No, but everyone was chalk. You're not leveraging anything. Everyone's chalk.
No. You absolutely are. You absolutely are. If Matt Stafford throws for 3-4 touchdowns to Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, and Kyren Williams does not get a touchdown at 43% owned, you're directly leveraging.
I agree, but I mean, you're leveraging.
No, but that puts you past 50% of the field if Kyren Williams shot fails.
Okay.
And then with Kyren Williams being 7,500, if Derrick Henry has the game that Kyren Williams should have at $600 less, like, then you also get indirect leverage at the running back position based on positional, right? So those are the things that I cared about when I was building out this lineup. I like situations like the Kyren Williams and Ram stack thing because it's really easy to say, if you don't have Kyren Williams in the stack, you should have a Ram stack. Or if you have a Ram stack, then it's easy to get off of the Kyren Williams shock and leverage either side of that game.
James, that is what I did. I played a Matthew Stafford lineup out of my 10 lineups.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So I did the obvious thing of, you want to leverage off the chalk pieces. So you play Matthew Stafford with Puka Nacua and Tyler Higbee. And then you wonder when all the other people have touchdowns, and you wonder, where's all your money when you've got, like, you pick literally the wrong people.
Yeah. Well, look, here's the lineup
I took the lower owned people, and the lower owned people didn't score, James.
I had Matthew Stafford with Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua. Puka Nacua put up 10. And then I brought it back with Curtis Samuel. That was great. And then for my 49ers exposure, because I was like, oh, yeah, I need some 49ers exposure, I'm going to take George Kittle. Put up like
five. See, it's harder to pick the one-off. See, I told you, it's harder to pick.
No, but you're still getting exposure to these spots. And like here's the thing. You're saying that it's harder to take and find the exposure to those individual pieces of the games, right?
Well, in any sport, that's always in hockey.
That
it's
is
harder
that
to
is 100% true. That is 100% true. But at the same time, on the other side of that, you saying that you'd rather take the astronomically low probability of a Tommy DeVito with Wandale Robinson ceiling game,
but that price
bringing
sure,
back
yeah,
with Waheed Shaheed. There's you're insane.
I'm going to spend part of my portfolio doing that. Yes,
you're insane.
Dude, that's how I win.
I know it is. You're still
right? Adam Sandler, the whatever movie is.
Uncut Gems.
Right?
People hated
this is
that
how
movie.
I win.
I don't know
this
why.
Is how I win.
I don't
the
know
thing
why.
Is
hate.
That you lose 99% of the time. I'm aware of that. That's right. Why and I have I a lose. Matthew Stafford. That's why I had a 10 lineups. I had a Howell lineup. I had a Stafford lineup. I had a Purdy lineup. I had a who else did I have? I had a Jordan Love. I had a Baker Mayfield lineup.
That was
I Baker
that
Mayfield, was Evans, and I played Jaden Reed in a correlated way. If people are going to play 40% on Jaden Reed, I'm not going to play him as a one-off. I'm going to play him, you know, with Love or with Mayfield in the run back of a Tampa base. That those were just the thing is that I look at here's my cash lineup. Like look at my cash lineup. Like I couldn't beat 178.62, so like it didn't matter. I think this probably was. If based on your methodology, probably the nut cash, it was a train. I mean, this was the aggregate. I made this in 20 seconds. I mean, like look how many people are on this train. 178.62. So from 124th place to, we're still going. 124th place to 269. So this lineup was like duped 145 times.
The only difference that I have, well, actually, in my write-up, I had Jets defense as the defense, not the Browns defense. But the only difference
is Antonio, leave money on the table?
No, the only difference was Antonio Gibson instead of Ezekiel Elliott and Rashid Shaheed instead of Demario Douglas.
Right, yeah. So, but, I mean, those were kind of the close types of things. Yeah. Right.
And then, like, you probably land on Rashi Rice if you're going with my strategy as well. But, like, everything else, yeah, it was really easy.
Right. So
Anyway, I don't. I'm not saying that you're wrong in the way that you do things. It's just there's two different methodologies. I think there's the eating the chalk stack and getting different with pivots, or there is the eat or getting different with your stack and then just eating a whole bunch of the chalk in terms of the.
No, I agree. No, I know, and it's not like I disagree with you. I'm arguing for that both, from a heuristic standpoint, are viable. The way that finding the off the board stack, like what the cheap key thing is cheap.
Yeah.
It just makes you look more like an idiot than playing a, like when you play a 2% own some weird wide receiver, like the rest of your lineup looks kind of like, oh, these are like normal people. And this, oh, you stacked the game with a 50 total and you took a shot on a 2% owned Travion Burks, or, you know, you took a shot on a 4% owned Derrick Henry, right? Like some, you know, it looks like, oh, okay, that seems sensible. But when you like, I stacked Tommy DeVito with two Giants receivers. You lost. Oh, holy God, this guy's crazy.
You're an insane person.
Yeah, but then you look at the rest of my lineup, and the rest of my lineup has all these flame emojis that are of all the people that you can't play, right? Good luck playing a stack and being able to fit in Kyren Williams and Christian McCaffrey as well as Rice, as well as Cooper Kupp, like into one lineup. Right. Yeah, you have to just jam in like Bailey Zappi and Devontae Parker in order to do that.
No, you're right. I don't disagree. In general, my process is to get different with running backs, with at least one running back. Typically, I eat the Giga Chalk. This week was a little bit different because I wanted a Ram stack. But typically, my process.
Donnie Watson has a point there. Might as well have went all the way down to Keenum. That if I had one more lineup, it would have been a Keenum.
No, I absolutely. I absolutely figured you would have a Case Keenum lineup this week. I did expect you to have a Case Keenum lineup because he was only like 14.
It didn't. You know what's funny?
Don't say he didn't project well.
He didn't project as well as the Tommy DeVito lineup.
Tommy DeVito's got wheels, though. I'll say that. That dude can run.
No, because the problem was the other side of the game with Tennessee. Like, Shaheed, Tommy DeVito plus Wandale Robinson plus either Barkley or Waller plus Shaheed. As a combination, price wise, projected better than Keenum, Noah Brown, Dalton Schultz, and Derrick Henry or DeAndre Hopkins or something like it. It just didn't work out. That it didn't. I didn't get there. But you know, Donnie Watson's trying to make a joke there. But it's like you might as well have gone down to Keenum. It's like, yeah, well, if I had 11 lineups, I would have. Man, the 11th lineup would have been a Keenum lineup. I mean, like that's exactly the point.
I had some people ask me about Keenum lineups. I couldn't go there. I didn't think that made sense on a slate like this with so many like good spots in terms of the Rams and the Cowboys and then that, or the Rams and the 49ers and then that Cowboys Bills game. I couldn't get down to paying down at quarterback that far. And maybe that's a leak for me. I don't know. I don't usually pay down at quarterback in GPPs. I just don't find it to be something that I usually do.
Something I primarily do.
That's I why know
you
it
make
is.
Fun of me every no. Monday. Right? I come in and I go, oh, I paid down. And then sometimes I pay down for Mayfield. Like, imagine I came in and I had Mayfield, Rashad White, and Chris Godwin at almost no percent, right? And I ran that back with Jaden Reed and Tucker Kraft. I'd be looking like a genius, right?
Yeah.
I pretty much had kind of that lineup just without Godwin, just with Mike Evans. But then the pieces around it, that's a lineup I didn't have McCaffrey in, and you're screwed. And then just that's when a 1,000,000% on 9,300 McCaffrey goes for 45 points, like nothing matters at that point, right?
Yeah, you're just shot.
Right.
Which is a bummer, but I mean, this is what it is. I have not been focusing that much on DFS lately. I've been doing a lot of props. So I pretty much just built an NFL lineup for the culture. Just so that I could like
play. What the hell does that mean?
It's a saying. It's just it's a James.
But to just be in with the kids? That's what all the kids are doing. They're building.
Well, no, I mean that's what I say. Doing things for the culture, man. I just want to
the culture.
Yeah,
donating to the cause. You donated to the cause.
I did. I donated to the people who actually played good lineups this week. Outside of the Derrick Henry thing, but I've been focusing a lot more on props and NHL. When the 888 the other day, I actually got to play NHL that day. That was nice. So I don't know. NFL season, once we get to week 15, it's really hard for me to like have full focus on it. You know what I mean? Like, we're to the...
You get sick of it. I'm sick of it already. Three more weeks of regular season. Let's get it over with.
Yeah. Let's speed along. You know, we know what the season is about at this point. But week 15, I mean, it's the same thing we talk about with every major sport. As soon as you get to the last 20% of the season, last 25% of the season, it's just like, okay, we get it. We can move on from this sport. And I mean, it's exasperated for me having about 10 weeks straight of just like everything going terribly for me. But that's what can happen in an NFL season. If you go on a cold streak for an NFL season, it can last an entire NFL season, which sucks.
For the best ball people. The best ball people are in shambles. The best ball people are, I've been seeing in my Twitter feed, the best ball people, where people are like, what is the point of life anymore? Because like half the quarterbacks that people drafted aren't even playing. Then you get I advanced all these Tyreek teams, and then he's and I've Tyreek, Nico Collins, and Jamar Chase, and it's like how did I lose? Well, because they all didn't play in 1 week, and you got screwed, and he didn't advance.
But Jordan, have you considered the week 17 correlations?
Not really, since none of my teams have gotten there. I mean, like, I don't have any best ball teams, but people are considering the week 17 correlation. The correlations they have for week 17 are with quarterbacks that aren't playing.
Yeah, they're not even playing.
Players that aren't healthy. Right? The big week. So what is in week 17? What's the big, like next week's slate, for instance? I think the big game is the Cowboys and the Dolphins. Right. That's, I saw that on the 9-game slate. Like,
yeah, I don't know what they are. But I know that's
play. What happens? I mean that the Cowboys are healthy at least, but I mean, some of these teams, I took a look at the 9-game slate, for instance. You know how many questionable tags? I can't even make a dummy lineup. It's that bad. It's this slate coming up next. It's a 9-game slate because we have a 2-game Saturday slate.
Yeah.
Like you got Colts, let's just go through it to show how ridiculous this is. You got the Colts and the Falcons. Okay. Good luck knowing, but we don't know what's happening with the Colts backfield. Taylor and Moss. Pittman's questionable. Good luck to you. We don't know anything currently about that. The Falcons could Arthur Smith you at any time, so who cares? Then you got Carolina and you got the Panthers and the Packers. Awful game, right? So it's like, this doesn't even matter. But everyone's A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones, who the hell knows, right? Then you got C.J. Stroud, probably comes back for the Texans. But imagine all the people that have advanced Amari Cooper and David Njoku, and their only quarterback is Deshaun Watson, right? Right? They're done, right? I mean, this is ridiculous. Then you have all the Justin Jefferson teams that have made it here. Mm-hmm. Right, somehow miraculously made it to week 16, and they're like, okay, this is when Kirk Cousins throws for, yeah. Nope, sorry, it's Nick Mullins. Like, it's a guy that couldn't possibly have been drafted by anyone, right? You get that, and then you get the Commanders, that who knows, maybe Jacoby Brissett is starting at quarterback. That you got your Garrett Wilson, Aaron Rodgers team somehow miraculously here, but you don't got that guy. You got Brian Robinson, who probably isn't going to play. And then you get to, oh, but at least my DK Metcalf, Geno Smith lineups, like Geno Smith probably isn't playing. And then Will Levis is probably dead, right? You're going through here. Oh, but I do have my week 16 correlations. I do have my Trevor Lawrence, Christian Kirk lineups, and like, nope, they're dead, right? Because Lawrence had a concussion and Kirk's out, so like, you're dead. Finally, all your Calvin Ridley teams are already dead because you couldn't have possibly advanced with him with how he performed most of the week, but now he's back. Like, Calvin, what's going to happen is that Calvin Ridley and Justin Jefferson are going to spike in week 16 for all the teams that never made it to week 16, right? And then you take a look at Chicago and Arizona, and I mean, like, dude, how do you play best ball? How do you possibly? Now, I can understand playing best ball, fine, and people play 150 teams and do whatever like that, but then people go and they like, let's analyze the past season and go like, this is how we're going to build our strategy for next season. It's like, dude, like sometimes the best strategy is to, I had my entire team ended up staying healthy for just, I ended up with a quarterback that got more than 0 points in week 16. Like sometimes that's the difference between you moving on to the playoffs is that you're playing against half of a bracket that literally has no starting quarterback and has only one running back starting because all the four other ones are dead or injured.
Well, I mean, last year, somebody basically died on the field and somebody made $1 million from it.
Well, that was because of a rescheduled game, not because...
Well, no, but he didn't
get points for the heart attack.
No, but that's why he won it, was right, because right. The game... Like, I don't want to, like, throw out generalities here, but making content for best ball is just, like, filler for the offseason. We shouldn't take it.
It's easy
to
do, but it's easy. Eric does it on Spike Week all the time. They could do it all season because essentially it's like if we did DFS analysis, mm-hmm. not on the games, but on strategy, and we based it all around one slate.
Yeah.
2013, right? It's just like based on that one slate, maybe on that one slate, it was a baseball slate and no team scored more than 5 runs. And we're like, yeah, people are talking about this correlation stuff. Probably shouldn't be stacking because based on our data that we have on that one slate from 2013.
Yeah.
The winning lineups, the top 1% of lineups actually didn't have much correlation at all. And then that's all it is. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all best ball is. We're looking at, you're playing one slate.
That's well, it. And Mike is right. Like it's fun. It is fun. I think drafting best balls is fun, but there's a couple things about this. Like one, I don't do a lot of things with like my money that are fun anymore, right? Like I've fully turned into Nit Blender over here where I'm like calculating my half Kelly for props because like I want my 5% edge each month. Like I don't do a lot of things.
You're getting
older.
You're getting, that's not, you're turning into a Nit. You're getting older.
Right. Yeah.
You have a kid, you have a dependent, you go, oh,
yeah.
Oh, I can't go broke. I can't like I have people that actually care about me.
Yeah. But like the thing is with that with best ball, you don't even really have a chance to go super degen because you can only get down what like 6K in an off season, 7K or something like that. If you max out the main contests on both sites, you get down. I mean, I guess you can like get down like up to 15, 16K if you like max out everything over the course of but like, what is that? That's like a month of play or something? It's like taking sand to the beach.
Right. I saw that. I saw Harris comment. Playing best ball is like taking sand to the beach.
it doesn't do anything for me. I do think that it's fun. And you know, Justin McMahon, DFI are really good picks, whatever. His strategy in the offseason for best ball was to auto draft based on his ranks. And just like let it auto draft. And that is something that I could get behind because that's super low stress. And that is extracting edge based on like, here's your ranks, just throw them out there and play the best plays. And like, he's probably
you're spending the least amount of time. It's like, if there's so much variance as it is, if I think I have an edge on your rankings compared to the field, and you think you have a, even if it's a 2% edge. Well, it's only taking up 2% of your time. So like, who cares?
Right.
Okay, there you go. But as opposed to, you're not even sure if you have a 5% edge and you're taking like, dude, these people that are drafting manually 150, 300 teams. It's like, the things about best ball that it doesn't fit the way that I seek edge. People play for fun. Fine. That's fine. But dude, I want to spend the least amount of time to make the most amount of money. So like,
right.
Best ball is like the opposite of that because it's like and with as little variance as possible. So but to me, best ball is humongous variance, a lot of time, little edge. What the hell am I? What am I spending? Why am I spending 45 minutes a draft doing?
Right. I was gonna say it takes
in June of all times.
Say it takes half an hour to do a full draft. It takes longer than that. Say it takes half an hour. And you do 300 of them in the off season. That's 150 hours of drafting. so that you can maybe have an edge that isn't completely based on luck.
Right. That's like working a month full time.
Yeah. 40 hour that's a week full job. Time.
Full time job.
Okay. So you can get down. Let's do the math on this. All right. We're going to do some math. People can log out if they don't want to do the math. But let's say it's a full month, right? It's 160 hours of work,
right,
to draft 300 best ball teams. Say that right. Each one is $10, right? So you have down $3,000 in best ball teams, right? If you have a 10% edge, 10%.
That means you expect
$300 for a month of work.
That's like $2 an hour, but it's $2.
Why would I do that?
It's about $2 an hour, James, which is, you know, what the other types of jobs that only pay you like $2 an hour?
Those are the types
of jobs where that you need tips. So that's what you need to do. If you're a best ball player that's going to grind and draft all those drafts, the sites need to tip you, right? There needs to be tipping culture in best ball.
Well, or you become a content creator, right? And you have people subscribe to your stuff. And that is like, there you go. That's how you make your tips in that industry. Like, and I understand why people are interested in it and like all that kind of stuff. But man, first off, you nailed it. Why would I want to be doing that in freaking June? Like, I need to relax for 3 months from like May until like August so that I can get ready for what is the hell of NFL and NBA season starting up in September and November.
If it's June, I'd much rather be doing the daily baseball drafts.
Yeah.
To say, if you told me you're going to have to spend 30 minutes on something, on a draft, on a live draft type of thing, I'd be doing the daily, you know, you pick 6 to 8 play, you know, like the snake draft style. I mean, even DraftKings has those. And the amount of money you could get down on those isn't like high, but it's like, at least I'm getting a return. I bet
you can get down more than 3,000 in an entire month though.
Right. No, only because you could roll it over. It's not like, maybe I can only get down 200 on those today.
Right.
But that's 30 days. That's 6,000 total. And it's 200 over and over and over again. It's not 6,000 and I got to wait 6 months for it to then show my 10% edge. It's like, no, I'd rather. I mean, that's really the key of why DFS and props and stuff like that is worth it, is that your edge is every day.
Right.
Right. Because people compare, like stupid people say, well, the S&P 500 returned like 11.8% and you're doing this for a 4% return. It's like 4% daily, compounded. Not 4%. Like you're quoting a 12% return on the stock market yearly, right? This is 4% daily.
Yeah.
Like you make so much more 4% daily than 12% yearly.
Yeah. It just comes down to like, how much do you value your time? And you know, we haven't had a chance to talk about the pick six stuff that the DraftKings put out.
You could play it though, right?
Yeah, and I like it a lot. I have models for it over at PayDirt, but I think that when they release that for baseball, that's gonna be huge for us because we're good at baseball and because like the peer-to-peer part of it, like it's so soft, man. I can't wait for them to release it in your area.
Is it soft enough to beat almost a 20% rake?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There are no smart people in those lobbies. Like,
I can tell from what I've seen on Twitter that everyone just takes overs, which is a sign that it's probably not that sharp.
It's hella soft, dude. Like, it's massively soft. I'm gonna start jumping into it for NBA a little bit more this week, but it's super soft. So I'm excited for you to get it because I think you'll crush it.
Well, I mean, I can't play. Okay, I think isn't it only in states that don't have? I mean, Tennessee is weird. Tennessee, you have sports betting, but you also have Prize Picks and Underdog. Like, a lot of times it's you either got one or the other. I mean, yeah, Kentucky, I got Prize Picks and Underdog, but it's kind of weird that DraftKings does not have Pick Six available in Kentucky.
They just released some more states. Hold on. It's now live in 8 more states: Alaska, Georgia, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, New Mexico, Utah, and Washington. I'm sure it'll come to Kentucky here pretty soon.
Well, I got to take a look at it. I got to see.
Yeah.
See if there's an.
It's good. It is. Peer to peer is big.
Better. Is it better? Better. I mean, is it better than Prize Picks and Underdog?
I imagine. I mean, yes.
It's not going to be better than straight prop bet. I mean, like, it's not going to. I mean, the rake is just
no. But as far as those like pick a card games, I think it's gonna have the highest ROI. It hasn't been out long enough for me to do math on it yet. But like, I think because of the peer to peer access and because there's late swap, that's the big thing. Is you can swap late off later. Swap
even in these.
Yeah, so you can swap off later pick.
Really? Because you think they're going to be too high owned.
Yep. It's massive. Like, it's a really good game for people who
understand. Well, these are the types of peer-to-peer games that this is what I thought was coming. But the top thing, as we explain in the Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports, which you can pick up at theoryofdfs.com, it still comes down to most of your edge comes from the skill gap between you and your opponents. So, like, James, you say now it's like you've been playing these and people are god awful in it.
Yeah.
I mean, if people got good, 20% rake.
Oh, yeah, that hurts. That'll hurt. But I don't think so. How much do you want to talk about this? Like,
we can talk about it next week, but I mean, we could talk more about it in general. I mean, because, dude, after the football season, we're going to need something to talk about on Mondays. Yeah.
Sure.
We can't, and once football season's done, you can't make fun of my vomit stacks anymore.
Well, until baseball comes around, they're gonna be stacking. Yeah, the
that's
Pirates
only once. I don't mind once a week making fun of my vomit stacks.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Just assume I played the Pirates every slate.
I will. Yeah, I assume I played the Pirates and the Marlins
and the Tigers.
Yeah.
So I always have one of those types of lineups, the stack that costs less than $10K. For five people, right? Like doing one of those types of things. Yeah, I'll have that.
Yep.
But people can talk more about it with you at paydirtdfs.com, right?
Yeah, paydirtdfs.com. And you can join the Discord. Discord's free. So you can go find that under member tools. And then, you can follow me on Twitter at paydirt_DFS.
Yep, and our Discord is free mostly. My channel isn't, but you go to rotogrinders.com/Discord. Join us in there. We got an NBA slate tonight. Got NFL, Monday Night Football, right? We got content coming up on the channel for you for that. We got the Grinders Live. We got Crunch Time. We got the Pre-Lock Show. So hit that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell. And definitely on your way out the door, hit that thumbs up button. You know, I like the thummy thumbs. And I'll be back tomorrow. I'll be with Tim. We got NHL tomorrow. NHL, big NHL slate. Gonna love that. So Tim will be on to talk about that. And then we'll be moving on to week 16, and got Christmas coming up. We got tons of stuff coming up. We got playoff content. We got MMA. Well, MMA is done for a month, right? I had a pretty decent slate. Made a couple of grand in MMA. I would have loved it if Pantoja didn't win. I would have rather Roy Val won. That would have been a good result. But we'll talk more about everything. And anything else that you're thinking about in daily fantasy, props and pick 'em. Monday through Friday, 11 o'clock Eastern on Roto Grinders today.